Good morning and a very happy Christmas to you. Welcome to our special Christmas Leap of Faith. For the next hour till nine, stay with us as we help celebrate this holiday morning. That's Katrine Ryan playing for us live, flute section leader of the RTÉ National Symphony Orchestra with I Saw Three Ships A-Sailing, and bringing us just a flavour of some other carols heralding the arrival of Christmas Day. For the next hour this morning, a variety of guests will come bearing bountiful gifts, but rather than gifts of the material kind, these will be perhaps a little bit more spiritual in nature. Each gift has a special significance for the bearer, enriching their own lives, and they'd like to share them with you. Well, very shortly, we'll begin to unwrap some of these intriguing gifts. Our wise men and women are, this morning, Philip McKinley, who's lay chaplain at Dublin City University and co-founding member of the Discovery Gospel Choir. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning. Happy Christmas.
Indeed to you. Aubrey McCarthy is the chairman of the Tiglin Challenge, Tiglin operating under a Christian ethos, helping people become mentally sound and emotionally balanced. Good morning and happy Christmas to you, Aubrey.
Good morning, Michael.
Nuala Hayes is an actor and storyteller, always welcome at a Christmas celebration.
Good morning, Nuala Connor.
August Nolagdit. August Pat Coyle, director of the Jesuit Communication Centre in Ireland.
Lovely to be here, Michael.
Good morning to you. Frank McDonald is former environment editor at the Irish Times and author of several books, completing our lineup this morning. Good morning to you, Frank.
Good morning to you, Michael.
So here we are with a wonderful group of guests for us. And Katrine Ryan, thank you for playing to us this morning. Beautiful ending. I love that. You've a really busy start to the new year with the RTÉ National Symphony Orchestra.
We do, yes. We, the National Symphony Orchestra, we have a fabulous New Year's Day concert and people seem to love it. It's Viennese waltzes and lots of Strauss
though,
and operatic arias. So it's all, you know, very easy listening.
And I know you'd be a great fan of people hearing music live.
Absolutely. I wish more people realised that hearing it live, you feel it so much more. And we're all emotional beings, so why not go and experience it?
It's amazing. Have so much live music on the programme this morning. Katrina, thank you for joining
us. Absolute pleasure. Happy Christmas.
But now, let's get on wrapping. And our table is really beginning to groan under the weight of all these gifts from our guests. I should just mention that the inspiration for all this gift giving came from a conversation I had on the Leap of Faith earlier this year with biologist and author Dr. Rupert Sheldrake. He revealed seven spiritual practices, each with scientifically proven health benefits for people of all faiths and none, ranging from practices such as rituals to pilgrimage, connecting with nature, to gratitude. And we'll start this Christmas morning with Philip McKinley, no stranger to this programme. Philip is chaplain at Dublin City University and a co-founding member of Discovery Gospel Choir. Philip, what gift would you like to share with us this morning?
Well, I have to unwrap it first.
Excellent.
The grand
very good.
Reveal. I don't know if
you've taken this
drum roll.
Properly.
I took it very seriously. Yeah. I wrapped it myself. Here we are. Maybe slightly understated. It is a cassette adapter. So like an old cassette tape with a great big wire at the end of it to plug into my phone. And this really has saved me because I have an old 18-year-old Toyota Corolla. And that means it has a cassette tape player in it. And it's been a joy since I got it. I dusted off all the old cassette tapes. And there's amazing stuff going back, you know, now 10. With sort of Wham and, you know, early classics like that. But also, you know, family recordings. My wife's grandmother used to record these fairy tales and we found this old recording of her voice and it was just so beautiful to hear it again. But the old cassette player updating to my iPhone and to other
any device iPod, that you can plug into. I have this wonderful image of Fluffy Dice as well. I'm sorry, but no.
Michael, that's, yeah. No. Look, I ordered it on Amazon. It cost me $1.50 China.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, especially when I was reading what Rupert Sheldrake said, because my commute has got worse. I travel one end of the M50 to the other. It can be 3 hours in my car every day. And actually, you can really get down on yourself, especially in winter, just sitting in gridlock traffic.
Now, I do believe that it's resulted in a kind of a slightly embarrassing experience for you at traffic lights. What happened there?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I now, on the M50, you can put the music as loud as you want and sing to your heart's content. I love singing, so just blast it. And the other day, I was playing some music and at full belt, I was going through Ranelagh and I stopped at some traffic lights and I had actually a big old school hymn, a beautiful Lift High the Cross, and I decided just to, it was one of those days I'd just belted. The sun was shining. And I didn't realise that, of course, an 18-year-old Toyota Corolla has
the thinnest of walls.
Walls. And I didn't realise all these people were staring at me. And this couple sort of looked at me and their faces lit up and they were sort of almost started to sing along with me. Now, my windows were up and everything. I just didn't realise I was in my bubble.
Do we have any other car singers around the table?
Yes.
Pat?
I love singing, and I remember I was practicing for the Messiah last year. We did it just with parish choirs. Mm. And, I mean, I haven't a great voice, but I can hold a note. But I had a towel over my head, having run out of the bathroom and washed my hair. I was no makeup, standing in front of the mirror going, "And he shall purify," and trying to practice. My daughter got it on the Facebook. I said, "You're not putting that up." And she said, "Oh, yes, I am." And I said, "Well, if you do, you have to advertise where it's on and where we're singing." Ever the communications person.
But at the same time, one to be remembered. But Philip, okay, well, let's put our serious hat on for a minute, because I know you also would have an idea about how this whole holiday period has turned.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're living in the Western world. 2 years ago, I had the opportunity to go to Bethlehem itself and to Jerusalem. And I was there on Christmas Eve. And it's just extraordinary. St. George's Anglican Cathedral in Jerusalem has an opportunity to travel into Bethlehem. There's three buses that are booked and you have to get your name on the list. And we did all this. And we went through, you know, the checkpoint and got into Bethlehem, to the Nativity Square. It was Christmas Eve. And there was a Greek Orthodox chapel, which is allowed to be used for an Anglican service for Christmas Eve. And when we queued in to get into this small chapel, and we were about the last family, and a security guard said to us, "There's no more room." And we weren't allowed in. It was freezing cold. Bethlehem is as cold as it is in Ireland at Christmas time. So myself, my wife, and my three children, we said, look, it's freezing cold. We're going to freeze if we stay out here. So we went back into the Church of the Nativity. And there was nothing happening in the main body of the church. And underneath the church, you have the Grotto of the Manger, which is where in tradition it says Jesus was born. Mm. And in fact, it was the warmest part of the whole church. So we just wandered and wandered and went down to the grotto. And when we got there, there was no one there. And it was myself, my wife, and the three kids. And it was the surreal moment of my daughter, who was about three at the time, just sort of dancing and laughing and playing around this place where, you know, the whole of the world, in every country in the world, they are focused on this place and you're here alone as the family. So it was this amazing, the power of the incarnation, which is the central message of Christmas. And just to be there was an unforgettable experience.
Philip, you're, you know, music in your blood. The Discovery Gospel Choir, what does that do for you?
Yeah, it's incredible. It's Ireland's intercultural choir, and we've been going, this is going to be our 15th year now, and in the past year we sang for Pope Francis in Croke Park, we did Culture Night, we've done a concert with Dublin Gospel Choir in Christchurch Cathedral, and we've a lot of amazing members have sung with us through the years, one of whom I'm just thrilled to have here is Loa, whose career has just skyrocketed since, and brings some of that cultural diversity into her own music. So we're going to offer you a little something
that
very special for Christmas.
Absolutely lovely.
Day.
And I suppose when you think about it, your cassette adapter, which is now unwrapped on the desk here, is bringing us the gift of music. And Loa joins us in the studio as well. Good morning. Happy Christmas to you.
Good morning. Happy Christmas.
Lovely to have you with in the studio as well. Tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I met Philip at Discovery Gospel Choir, where I spent some wonderful time singing. I'm half Irish. My mum's from Dublin and my dad is from Sierra Leone. And it was, in fact, definitely during my time at Discovery, because we sing in, what is it, Philip, 92 languages?
Oh, crazy. Numbers.
Really?
A huge number of languages, and bringing in so many different cultures. I sort of felt, among many other things, I felt it was very inspiring for me to bring music from both Ireland and Sierra Leone into my own personal work and compositions. So my music takes in folk styles from Ireland, somewhat Ireland and Sierra Leone, and then kind of American soul. So it's quite different. And yeah, since I left the choir, I've been pursuing music professionally for the last couple of years. So I was very lucky in the last couple of months to sing at Oris when the president was inaugurated.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Now, of course, you would, at one stage would have been working, now music full time. Is that the way?
Yep. I trained as a pharmacist. your friendly local pharmacist. But I always knew I wanted to pursue music. So I kind of was very sensible and I worked part time in the chemist until I could kind of set out on my own.
There's a touch of the Irish advice in there, you know, the proper job.
Oh,
isn't
yeah.
that it?
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
You have the bit of paper. Yeah, the bit of paper. And then you can do what you want.
Exactly. But look, you're free to do whatever you like now.
What about an important Christmas for you? Is there one that stands out for you?
I've had some magic Christmases in different parts of the world. My very first Christmas was in Kenya, where I was born. Then we spent some years in London when I was a child. But I grew up in Maynooth. So my strongest memories of Christmas would be in Maynooth with my siblings, my parents. Very standard family Christmas, just playing songs and, yeah, just lovely family time.
And you've got a treat in store for us, Philip. Will you tell us what we're about to hear?
Well, this came from a Discovery Gospel Choir Christmas concert. It was just a little arrangement of the beautiful 14th century carol, "Unto Us Is Born a Son," and Loa sang it, and it just mesmerised. It's one of my most abiding memories because the last note, there's utter silence in the audience, and I remember we did it in the Sugar Club, and I remember stringing the last note, and just like a tidal wave of roar from the crowd, because it's so stunning, and Loa's voice is just angelic. It captures it absolutely beautiful and perhaps returns it to its original origins in the 14th century.
Absolutely delightful, Loa. Thank you. And Philip McKinley as well. And isn't it wonderful the difference a live piece of music makes to the soul?
Fantastic.
Indeed, heart and soul as well. So let's see what else is under our spiritual Christmas tree. We're joined now by Pat Coyle, who's the director of the Jesuit Communication Centre in Ireland. Pat, what have you got for us?
Okay, I have got a poem.
Lovely.
Because I love poetry. And I think that poetry gives us another way of knowing the world other than the way we think we know it just through our senses. And I think that it allows us to see reality in a different way. And I think that's what poets do, and I think that's what artists do. And when we see it in a different way, another part of us is touched. And the poet that I'm going to talk about is a man called John Shea. And he's both a poet. I read his stuff when I was 18. He's from America in Chicago, and he was a priest at the time. He left and got married. And just in the last number of years, I found out that he is a theologian and a biblical scholar as well. And I've read his commentaries on the Gospels. I think there's a lot of not very good material written about Gospels and religion and spirituality. This man is outstanding in what he writes, and they're just short little taking apart the gospel and then a little and a teaching. So in this one that I'm going to read from him, he's talking about the Mass, midnight Christmas Mass. And he's making the point that we're often so busy, and this is the cliched point that, you know, we're so busy we miss the meaning of Christmas. Mm. And he says, and then people say, oh, we missed the meaning. But he's making the point that the great and wonderful, and I want to say G-D, because we don't really know what we mean when we use the word God, but we do know that that great being, that holy other, chose through his son on Christmas Day, Christians believe, to become one of us. But in religions throughout the world, we believe that the great spirituality is that there is something greater than ourselves, but that we can, it chases us. Like, we think we're chasing it, but it wants to be revealed, it wants to be known, it wants to be seen. And that in our lives, we sometimes have moments, and like the poet would do, or the storyteller, or the music, that reveals that to us. So he calls it when you see a halo. So just my own seeing of a halo was a couple of years ago when my niece Orla was born next door to me in Tritonville Avenue. My grandniece Orla. And I'd always wanted to see a baby being born because I've had two children, but when you're doing it, you don't really be concentrating. People, it's a mystery, it's a miracle, it's wonderful. And you're going, oh my God, it's over. So I really wanted to see this. So I asked my niece, could I come in to see it? And she said, no way. But 2 hours after she was born, I got a call and she said, Orla is here if you want to come in. So I got into the car because I was at work. In I went. And Ron, her dad, was in the bed, and this little baby was lying in the bed beside him, tiny, newborn, 2 hours old, radiant. I just burst into, I mean, the tears just started to flow down my face. And it was like a piece of God lying on the bed. And I think John Shea would say that's seeing a halo. So this is his poem, and this is my wish. So it's called Seeing Halos. Even at Christmas, when halos are pre-tested by focus groups for inclusion in mass market campaigns, they're hard to see. Annie Dillard was scrutinising the forest floor at Pilgrim's Creek when she looked up and saw a tree haloed in light. She had caught the tree at prayer in a moment so receptive and full, the boundaries of bark burst and its inner fire became available for all. But seeing halos is more than a lucky sighting. It entails the Advent skill of sustaining attention, the simple act, as Dillard found, of looking up. That is how halos are seen, by looking up into largeness, by tucking smallness into the folds of infinity. I do not know this by contemplating shimmering trees. Rather, there was woman busy at Christmas table, and I looked up to catch a rim of radiance etching her face, to notice curves of light sliding along her shape. She outglowed the candles. All the noise of the room left my ears, and silence sharpened my sight. When this happens, I do not get overly excited. I merely allow love to be renewed, for that is the mission of halos, the reason they are given to us. Nor do I try to freeze the frame. Halos suffer time, even as they show us what is beyond time. But when halos fade, they do not abruptly vanish, abandoning us to the sorrow of lesser light. They recede as Gabriel departed Mary, leaving us pregnant. So my wish for everybody, man, woman and child, in Ireland and further abroad today, is that they may become pregnant. And in particular, if I might say, to those bankers who are evicting people from their homes at a Christmas time, that they might give birth to a heart and know that there is more to life than commercialism.
Yeah, there's power in those words, isn't there? Pat, tell us about a Derry Christmas.
I love going home for Christmas. I have never, ever spent Christmas in my own house. I've always been, you know, either up in Donegal with my family or in Derry with my family. And I was just thinking about, I was very lucky in the sense we didn't have an awful lot of money, but it was still lovely to have what we had. And it was great, you know, that really, and I remember my mother had a beaver lamb coat. And like that was a big deal, you know, but it only came out about once a year. And we'd go to the pantomime and she would have the coat on and there'd be a smell of her perfume. And I was frosty and I could, was holding on to her arm and I could smell the Soir de Paris. I do believe the name of the perfume was. I never forgot it and I was only about six. But, you know, feeling that magical time. And the person, the pantomime in Derry was really good. It was run by Bishop Eddie Daly, who's now died, but famous of Bloody Sunday. And Eddie had a great dramatic sense and he ran a great pantomime. And Frank Carson was one of the leads. So when you went to that, you laughed.
That's
the way
I tell him.
So it was great times. Yeah, really lovely.
Nuala, you have a connection, of course, as well with Derry in your own time.
Oh, yes, Derry. I have wonderful memories of Derry. Derry in the middle of the Troubles, because I was fortunate enough to be invited to be part of Brian Friel's production Translations. Wonderful. And it was 1981, and only feels like yesterday, but it was quite a long time ago. But it was absolutely wonderful because it is a terrific play about language and place, and it tapped into what was happening, the struggles that were happening at the time. So I've been there. I was very happy to go back for the celebrations a couple of years ago, and it's such a transformation between the bombed out shell of a city it was to see it now gleaming. So change happens slowly, but it does.
Aubrey McCarthy, chairman of the Tiglan Centre, Tiglan Challenge. You were a guest with us at the beginning of the year and we were intrigued by the work that's going on in Tiglan. Remind us.
Michael, so what we have is a rehab programme, but it's a residential programme for men and women that suffer from addiction. There's a lot of pressure at Christmas for people. So what we do at the centres is we actually have a lockdown where people don't leave. We have our Christmas dinner there. We have all the students taking part in the Christmas festivities, but their families are not there.
So on this Christmas day, they're not at home.
They're not at home. Mm. And the reason is because Christmas is a terribly pressurised time for people that have any problems with addiction. Families are under pressure with or without addiction. But I know our guys, our ladies that are listening, they would see Christmas as a very tough time because there's alcohol, there's drugs, there's everything and there's pressure. So put all that together in one pot and you have a difficult time. But at Tiglan, it's a fun time. We had Family Day a week ago, where all the families, their kids come up and Santa Claus visits. And so that's their time with their family. But Christmas Day has to be kept separate.
It is the lockdown. Mm. What's your gift to us today?
My gift, listening to you guys, I'm impressed with your gift, so I just hope mine is okay. I recently heard Cameron McIntosh been interviewed on RT Radio 1 about Les Mis, and I went to see it last week, and what a fantastic musical. And to me, Les Mis summarises even what's going on in Ireland today. A lot of people in poverty, a lot of people homeless, in deprivation. And Les Mis is a story of getting it together, helping people that are in need. And as Pat summarised at the end of her gift, just even a plea to the bankers out there, you have a lot of people that are becoming homeless who never, ever thought that they would end up homeless. Homelessness was always confined to the people who did nothing in their lives. Now you have people who actually can't afford €2,500 a month in Dublin rent, and they're actually homeless. And as part of Tighlin, we've an outreach called the No Books Cafe, and that reaches out into the city every night of the week. We park under Cleary's clock, and we have a coach that converted to a cafe. So homeless people come on and they get whatever they need, but really they just need a chat. They need to be involved. They need to have fun. We have live music. And so it's really to feel belonging. But as regards the Les Mis, if you listen to the soundtrack, it's all about redemption. It's about somebody that's come under pressure, ends up in jail for stealing a loaf of bread to feed his sister's child, and ends up serving 19 years in prison. Okay, so one guy reaches out, a bishop, and he gives him everything that he has. And what he does is he robs the bishop. And he just thought, you know, this guy's a fool. He's given me whatever he has. So during the night, he robs the bishop and he steals silver. The police catch him, and police bring him back to the bishop, surrounded by an audience of people, and they tell the bishop, listen, this guy says you gave him the silver. And the bishop says, yes, that is correct. But in fact, he left the best behind. So he opens the safe, and he gives the Jean Valjean, he gives Jean more silver and the candelabras. And Jean Valjean is so taken by this that he's confronted by mercy, and he is so grateful that he's broken. And he changes his life. And it reminds me of a guy I met on Talbot Street 4 years ago now, maybe five, and he was selling heroin. And I was going to fill up the flasks to bring them back to the bus. And this guy, Decky is his name, and he was selling heroin, and I asked him, would he like a cup of coffee? He wasn't happy with that, and he told me where to anatomically put the coffee. So we got to know each other over a period of weeks. He came off the bus eventually. He came into the program. This guy has a wonderful story, but he was 11 or 12 when he robbed his first bank. So he was, this guy had a story. He was Jean Valjean. We showed him grace. We showed him who we are, just authentic love, basically. And this guy changed. He's now has his own business. He's doing really well. And I just think that's the story of redemption. And I just want to read out one thing. If you look at this, when Jean Valjean was confronted, the bishop turns to him and he says, remember this, my brother. See in this some higher plan. You must use this precious silver to become an honest man. By the witness of the martyrs, by the passion and the blood, God has raised you out of darkness. And I think that's the story of what we do at Tighlin. We try to help people. They're in darkness. And there's a lot of people that are listening this morning that are in darkness, that are in homeless in hotels, in shelters, are in the RDS for the Christmas meal, preparing to go there. And you just go, guys, we want to help you. So whatever we can do as a community, as a nation, we need to get behind these people in trouble.
Let's hear Colin Wilkinson.
God on high, hear my prayer. In my need, you have always been there. Bring him home. a son I might have known. If God had granted me a son, the summers die one by one. How soon they fly on and on. And I am old and will be gone.
Colm Wilkinson from Les Miserables, and Bring Him Home. Aubrey, your gift to us. What a beautiful piece. No.
I think the whole musical of Les Mis, but Bring Him Home is special because you're praying, he's praying God on high, bring these guys peace, bring them joy. And at this time of the year, you just want people to have that peace, have that joy. So when you see that story, you see Bring Him Home, that's what gospel, that's what Christmas is all about.
Frank MacDonald is former environment editor of the Irish Times. Frank, hearing Aubrey describing that Dublin for you, the one that you've been writing about for years.
Well, indeed, yeah. I mean, I'm 68 now. My goodness, I'm so shocked about
young
that.
Young man.
Well, come on. And but I'm obviously then a child of the 1950s. And so the Dublin that I grew up in was really the era of thrift and make do and mend and waste not, want not. And you know, I've tried to reflect that in the latest book that I've done, the Truly Frank, a Dublin memoir, which is really a tribute to my parents in a way. And a lot of what I associate with Christmas is thanks to them. I mean, on one occasion, my dad spent a couple of months, I think it was, working in secret in the garage at the bottom of the garden in Glenmore Road, just near the Phoenix Park. And he was working away, building a railway set for us as kids. And it was the most magical thing to wake up to on Christmas morning when we were about, I suppose, 8 or 9 or 10 or something like that. And he had, you know, obviously the trains were, he didn't make the trains, they came from Hornby in England. And but he had built the tunnel and he had built other things. And he used to, the tunnel was made out of papier-mâché, which he had basically painted black and streaked with silver. And in order to make it look even better, when he got the train going around the track, he used to blow smoke from his pipe through the tunnel, yeah. So that when the train came out the other end, it was belching with smoke. And we were just mesmerized by this.
You know, there's two layers to your box of the gift, and I'm going to come back to the second layer in a minute, because I want to go next, would you believe, to Algiers, because we're joined on the line this Christmas morning by Rima Halfoy. Rima, good morning to you.
Good morning to you too.
And
how are you?
Very happy Christmas to you.
Happy Christmas to you too. Wishing you all the best.
And to you. I believe you're actually in teacher training. Is that correct? In DCU?
Yeah, I'm in third year in DCU, St. Patrick's College, yeah.
So what we're talking to you about more than anything else is finding out about a Muslim Christmas.
Yeah, non-Muslim Christmas. I suppose a Muslim Christmas is kind of more of the lack of Christmas. We don't really celebrate it. So there's not really the Christmas tree and the lights and everything else over here or in kind of a Muslim household, yeah.
But at the same time, the nativity is mentioned in the Quran.
Yeah, and it's a very big piece of kind of the Islamic faith. And it's all Muslims kind of growing up. We know the story of Jesus and how he grew up and how he was conceived and the story of Mary. I suppose the difference for us is kind of we do really concentrate on the story of Mary and the strength that Mary had carrying Jesus as a single mother and through this kind of miraculous conception and the community kind of turning against her and everything. So it's a really big part of the Islamic faith.
Rima, you have a gift for us on this Christmas morning.
I do. And this gift kind of comes from my experience over the past couple of years being in and out of the classroom and my own self-growth. It's the gift of taking a breath and just taking a moment for yourself. So recently in my life, my grandfather passed away and I kind of had to come into myself and just learn to, you know, take a moment and take a breath. And as well as that in the classroom, and this is a skill that I love bringing into the classroom and teaching to the classes while I'm on placement, is learning to take a breath and inhale and exhale and just being in the moment and seeing the reward and the effect it has on you long term is amazing. So to everyone at home and to everyone listening, to you guys in the studio, I'd really like highly recommend over the new year and over the Christmas holidays, take a minute for yourself and to be fully present in what you're doing and every kind of morsel that you eat, every sip that you take, and with your family and friends, because it's you know, life goes by really fast, and it's a skill that I think unfortunately we don't learn until it's a bit too late, and then we're like, I need something to hold on to, and it's that moment of just taking a breath and being fully present. So that's my gift to you guys.
We're all taking a breath, as you mentioned it. In fact, people listening to you with their eyes closed too. And being at home in Algeria, do you reconnect? Does it take long to reconnect with everything back there for you?
I suppose, like for me, my parents were great because they always kind of reminded me, okay, you're home here in Ireland and in Dublin and everything, but your home is also where your grandparents are and where we grew up. And kind of when we go back, I used to spend a lot of time with my grandfather, who now has sadly passed away, but he always say like, oh, that's where, you know, I used to take your mother to school, or that's where I used to do my shopping, or we used to live in this area, and would always kind of bring us back. And like, so I suppose it takes me a couple of days to kind of come out of the Dublin lifestyle where you say hey to everyone instead of hey, you're saying salam alaikum, and getting used to hearing the adhan every day, and kind of come back to another part of myself, another kind of different type of home. And it's lovely as well because it's a whole different culture that I get to enjoy the best of both worlds. I'm getting to enjoy like a whole different traditions and foods and a whole different lifestyle where kind of the country comes alive at night instead of during the day. And you know, it's a lovely other place to come to, and I'm very privileged in the sense that I have two identities and I can go between the two and just hop on a plane and I'm at home as well somewhere else in the world.
Well, we wish you all the very best for the time
thank
that you're
you
away and thank you so much for joining us on The Leap of Faith
thanks
this Christmas
for having
morning.
Me and enjoy the rest of your day, everyone.
Rima, thank you.
Bye-bye. See you now. Bye.
Philip, we had one gift from you earlier on, which was our miraculous cassette adapter, which we're still trying to figure out.
Nobody understands,
but exactly.
That's fine.
But you have something else at the bottom of your stocking.
Well, it's, yes, a metaphorical stocking because it's a bit too big to put in a physical stocking, and it's a harp. And this was really inspired by a TED talk during the year. TEDx Fulbright talk took place in the Tivoli Theatre. And the theme I went with was why every nation needs a harp. And my argument was that Ireland, you see, is unique. We're the only country in the world that has a single musical instrument as our national emblem, a harp.
It's on everything, isn't it?
It's on everything. It's all over the place, everywhere. Yeah. All of us are carrying a harp. We've got harps on our coins. We've got harps on our ID. We've got harps, you know, Ryanair, the harp, and all different companies and businesses.
And
sport
Guinness
and culture.
Has one, which is the reverse
that's
of
correct.
The official one.
And guess
another Frank. Very good.
Another drink that has a harp is harp itself,
that's
you see.
Right.
So
that's
it's everywhere.
True.
I just have to tell you, I got an early Christmas present this year, and it was from my friend Rita Duffy, who's in South America, and she sent me a picture designed by a woman called Siobhan Harton, and it is called The Sacred Heart of Michael D. Higgins. And it's an image of Michael D. with a wonderful bright halo around his head and a harp where his heart is, bursting with fire. So the sacred harp of Michael D. Higgins was my first Christmas present.
Amazing.
See what you started here, Philip.
It's the gift that keeps giving.
Yeah, you definitely have. But, you know, there's a story I want to catch from you because, and that is, you were heading out to an island.
Yeah.
And you had your harp with you. Set the scene.
August bank holiday, I went out to a little island just off Slinehead in Connemara in West Galway, and the island's called Inishkeira.
Windswept, I'm guessing.
Very windswept and incredible, full of just rabbits and, well, hares. And I decided to do, I had a midlife crisis, my Bear Grylls moment, and wild camping. And
so
I
what
said,
does a man bring? A harp?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I said, no, it's an existential hermit moment. And I did it. Brought a tent, a 5-litre bottle of water. And I brought fish just to really feel the rugged, although I bought it in the shops.
Yeah, there. Right. Yeah.
And the harp. And literally, it was the most extraordinary thing that a small mini harp, I brought it with me. And I put it on the beach and the wind blew through it and caused the most extraordinary song to play, and I carried it for the 3 days I was there. So this song with me the whole time, and I was all on my own. I caught little bits of it on video, but it reminded me of the story that the famous legend goes that how Danny Boy was written. There was a blind harper who fell down, was drunken, and fell down in the Rove Valley in Derry, and when he awoke, the wind was blowing through his harp, playing Oh Danny Boy, and he woke and sort of composed himself, learnt the tune and brought it to his patron's castle and played it.
And that's what we're listening to right this minute, which is a recording that you made of the wind blowing through the harp. Let's just listen for a moment. Is that a wonderful sound? And as you say, just let nature play.
Yeah, and what was extraordinary is the waves lapping, you had the birds gulling or gawking or whatever the noise word
gulling,
is.
Above, above. Squawking.
Squawking. And there was this symmetry with it all. It was this great sort of symphony of nature and everything interconnected with it in harmony, in rhythm with one another. And I was the only audience member. It was extraordinary.
Now, we're delighted to be joined in the studio by one of the best harpists in the business. That's Andrea Marlisch, who's principal harpist with the RT National Symphony Orchestra. Andrea, have you come across this idea before of nature playing music?
I have indeed. But not in such a romantic setting. Yeah. It was last year at the 1916 celebrations. We were out in Collins Barracks. The orchestra were playing 100 Years a Nation, music by the wonderful Sean Davey. And we had a side and a top to our cover, but there was no front and there was no back. And it was gusting. Anybody remember Easter Sunday last year? And it was gusting how many miles an hour. And everybody around was just mesmerised by the sound of the wind coming through the harp. I didn't have to touch it. I just let the wind make the music. It was fabulous. Yes.
I think, therefore, you should give it a bit of a run this morning for us. And let's set up the piece of music that we're going to hear. La Source.
La Source. I think the one piece of music that is so indicative of harp writing is this. It's a study, a beautiful study, by Alphonse Hasselmann, who was teacher at the Paris Conservatoire at the turn of the last century. It's called La Source and called The Stream. Thank you.
Andrea, thank you so much. That was such a beautiful sound.
Fantastic.
Absolutely fantastic sound. Frank McDonald, we opened the box from you, but we didn't ask you what the gift was.
Well, I thought what I would do is I would offer a little helping of nostalgia.
Ah, go on.
Memories of Christmas past and just read out a brief section of the book that deals with this. And every December the 8th, without fail, our mother would take us into town to go shopping, watch Tom and Jerry cartoons in the Grafton Cinema, feed the ducks in St. Stephen's Green, and then have tea and buns in Bewley's with its aromatic coffee roaster in the window. We also queued up to visit every department store's Santa, including the one that who landed by helicopter on the roof of Pimm's on South Great George Street, as we watched in awe at this dramatic event that was obviously designed to outdo Brown Thomas, Switzers, Arnott's, McBurney's and Cleary's. We would rate them all on the basis of price, presence, friendliness and the fit out of each shop's grotto. Mam was a great baker, and in the run-up to Christmas, our kitchen in Glenmore Road was turned into a virtual industrial zone for the production of plum puddings and cakes, mostly for distribution as presents to close relatives. Some of them just wanted a plain rich fruitcake, while others preferred theirs plastered with royal icing, with or without the marzipan layer. Either way, there were lots of opportunities for us as kids to get the lick, a taste of the batter straight from the bowl before it was all put into greaseproof paper lined baking tins and then into the oven of our all electric Moffat cooker. In the week before Christmas, we would do the rounds in our first family car, a Ford Anglia, instantly recognisable by its backward slanting rear window, delivering all the cakes and puddings, including one to Grandad's house on Taylor's Lane in Whitechurch above Rathfarnham. F.X. Coughlin, who was my mother's father, was a kindly old man who would slip each of us half a crown every time we went there and a green pound note at Christmas, although we'd have to do our party piece to earn it. Ours was that tedious old ditty, "There's a hole in my bucket," which I used to dread having to perform, as I couldn't really sing for my supper or at all. Our small illuminated Christmas crib at home had been made by Dad on his carpentry bench, and we loved filling it with straw and figurines representing Mary, Joseph, baby Jesus, sheep, goats, shepherds and a donkey. We also had figurines of the three wise men, but we only put them in later on the 6th of January, the Feast of the Epiphany. On Christmas Eve, we would carefully place a flickering red candle in the living room window and leave out long socks at the ends of our beds for Santa Claus, waking up in the morning to find them filled with bars of Cadbury's Dairy Milk chocolate, a Toblerone and other treats. Christmas was also our main theatre-going time of year. We went to all of the pantomimes, not just the Gaiety and the Olympia, but also St. Anthony's Hall on Merchant's Quay, St. Francis Xavier Hall of Gardiner Street and the Father Matthew Hall on Church Street, the Queen's on Pierce Street, temporary home of the Abbey while its new theatre was being built in the early 1960s, always put on something Oscailge during the Christmas season. And it was all just totally delightful, and it never once occurred to us that our parents might be struggling financially because we never felt it.
Frank, with the exception of the pantomime, you've described my Christmas growing up as well. And I think maybe for a lot of people listening too, all of those little intricate moments that are in there. That's lovely, Frank. Thank you very much indeed. But before we go to our next present, joining me on the phone now is Aideen Moore. Aideen's team leader at Ozenham House in Wexford. Aideen, good morning to you. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas and good morning to everyone.
Indeed, thank you. Tell us what's happening down there in Ozenham House over the Christmas period.
Well, yes, we've had a very busy couple of weeks leading up to the big day. So we have 31 service users here with us at Osmond House, and we're full for the Christmas. Osmond House is a homeless men's hostel, and it's run by the St. Vincent de Paul. So over the last couple of weeks, we've been working closely with any of our service users who may have family that they can return to over Christmas. You know, Christmas is a great time for building bridges, and anyone that has family or friends that they can relink in with, we try to support that. So we've, over the last couple of days, got people on buses and trains and that to try and get them back to their families for Christmas.
Now, Aideen, as you said, most people you'll try and get them home, but there will be some people still availing of your facilities on today, Christmas Day.
Yes, unfortunately, there's a lot of our gentlemen don't have anywhere to go today, so they will be here in the hostel with us. So Christmas, as you can imagine, can be a very
emotional time for everybody, and I think everyone has a lovely image in their head of what Christmas might be, and I don't believe anyone ever thought that they'd be here in a homeless hostel. So we really have been working hard over the last couple of weeks to make it as homely as possible. We have our very large Christmas tree, and Santi did make special deliveries last night as well.
That's good to hear. It's funny, I'm sure Aubrey, you agree with me on this one, that and Aideen too, that it's at this time of the year we pay attention to it, but this is a 365-day a year issue, isn't it?
Well, that's it. We're open 24 hours a day. We're 7 days a week, 52 weeks of the year service. And unfortunately, we're always busy. But I suppose Christmas is just, it can highlight things for people and it can make it that extra bit difficult. So the support really needs to be there for them.
Aideen Moran, thank you so much for joining us on the Leap of Faith this morning.
And very happy Christmas.
And happy Christmas to you.
Happy Christmas, Aideen.
Aubrey, interesting to hear it being now a nationwide event rather than simply the big towns, the big cities.
Michael, it's fascinating because when you think of Wexford, I'm dealing with a lot of people in Dublin where our outreach is based. But the people that come to the bus every night are from all over the country. And they're ordinary people like you and me who have found that they are one paycheck away from homelessness. And the person's called at the door and they're finally evicted and now they're homeless. So my heart goes out to the guys spending the Christmas day today in the homeless shelter down in Wexford. Mm. But it sounds like...
they're in good hands.
They're in good hands.
You know, the other thing is we mustn't normalise it. It no. can't become something Absolutely. that is...
It's an emergency and yeah, I think yeah. we need to declare that.
I totally agree with you. I think calling it a crisis is belittling it. It's an emergency that we're facing on the housing front. Mm.
Next on this Christmas morning, there's always room for a storyteller. And Nuala Hayes has been with us all morning. Nuala, lovely to have your gift unwrapped for us now.
What Thank do we you. Have? Well, the gift that I would like to bring, we all have, everybody has it, everybody listening and everybody around the table here, it's the gift of story. And for me, Christmas is a wonderful story. The Christmas story that was referred to in the song is a wonderful story, and telling stories is what makes us human. And there is a belief that it is actually the ability to tell story has helped us evolve as far as we have now. And maybe stories will save us from whatever is going to happen in the future, because you have to listen. For a story to work, you have to listen. I just wanted to say too that I hugely appreciate the Christmas story, and I'm glad that Aubrey and some of your guests have covered the darkness of Christmas, because I have struggled through Christmas valiantly a lot of the time, because I wouldn't be like your mother, Frank. I wasn't a great cook and I never seemed to be able to get it all together. So by now, Christmas morning is the time that I breathe a sigh of relief. The build-up is over. All that excess, all that seeking is all over. But for me, I have kind of got through the struggle of Christmas by remembering it's actually a very, very ancient, necessary festival. It's the festival of light. And long before Christianity came, our ancestors would celebrate light at the winter solstice. And you only have to go, which I never had the opportunity to do, go to Newgrange, but you've probably been there.
It was just extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary.
But to me, that is really what it's about. It's about the way we are balancing between darkness and light. Darkness is death, it's the end. Light is life, it's the beginning of a new life. And this is why the Christian story, the story of the birth of a new life, is light as opposed to the death. And the mythology in Ireland, we have an amazing collection of Irish stories. Our ancient mythology is about that balance between darkness and light. Mm. Crom Dubh, the ancient god of darkness, being beaten by Lu, the god of light. So I suppose that is what I would like to celebrate, is the gift of story.
And do you have a story for us?
I do. And it's a very short story, of necessity. And it is a story that has been flying around for a number of years. It originally came, actually, we talked about Bethlehem, from the Middle East. And it's probably a Hasidic story, a Jewish Hasidic story. And it is called Truth and Story. And Andrea is going to help me tell it.
Thank you.
Truth and Story were walking along the road. Truth was serious and intense. Story was open-faced, smiling, laughing, chatting to everybody. She was wearing colourful clothes and the bangles and the long hair and all that. Everybody wanted to talk to her. Everybody wanted to be in her presence. Truth was complaining. Nobody wants to talk to me. Nobody wants to hear what I have to say. Nobody wants to know the naked truth. Story looked at her. She was indeed half naked. Her hair was plastered to her head. There was a scar on her cheek and she was itching and scratching at a sore that wouldn't heal. Story went over to her and said, "Come on in here under my cloak and I'll protect you." And Truth stepped in under her cloak and Story wrapped her large, voluminous cloak around the truth. And that's why, to this day, wherever you have a story, you have the truth hidden under its cloak.
Nuala, that was superb. Nuala Hayes there with a beautiful Christmas Day story. And, you know, isn't there a wonderful thing about the yarn?
You know, everybody here has a story. That's what we've been doing all morning, is telling stories, really, to indicate what we feel and what we want to say. The great writer Philip Pullman, I don't know if you know his work, he says that after nourishment, food, shelter and companionship, the world needs stories in order to survive.
Well, I'm afraid the morning is catching up with us. There are Brussels sprouts to be cooked. So a final quick around the table for you on your Christmas Day wishes. We'll start with you, Frank.
Well, I just hope that the government and everybody wakes up to the really serious threat of climate change. But time is running out.
Aubrey?
As I brought my gift, the gratitude with Les Miserables, the final epilogue, to love another person is to see the face of God. And I think what a better way to leave on Christmas Day morning, just to say, love each other and you'll see, you'll witness God.
Pat Coyle.
So my wish for everybody is that even if things go wrong, may you have a laugh and be able to see that there's fun at the side of everything.
Most decidedly, Philip.
There is a fragility in the world, in the environment, in the paychecks. We're all one paycheck away from homelessness. So Christmas is about love, beauty, gentleness, entering that fragility, and let the beauty, the light that is Christ, come into that.
Our final word to our storyteller this morning, Nuala Hayes.
I hope that the 50% of my family who are living down at the other side of the earth in Australia, in the sunshine, have had a lovely, lovely day.
That sounds indeed like a brilliant idea. And a special thank you to my guests this morning and to those who joined us on the telephone as well. A special thank you to them. To our musicians, Loa, Katrina Ryan and Andrea Marlier. And thank you, Andrea, for playing, as we wish you and yours, a very peaceful and happy day.